Read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Artificial intelligence, or AI, it's a topic that generates a lot of talk, a lot of hope, and a lot of concerns these days. On the positive side, AI has the potential to aid in solving an array of vexing societal problems and to help average people work better and faster in numerous ways. On the other hand, of course, AI also raises real concerns, both with respect to the ability of humans to control and manage it, and the possibility that it will be abused by bad actors in order to mislead people with false or phony communications. This latter concern is of particular relevance as Americans prepare to vote in the 2024 election. Fortunately, a lot of smart people are paying close attention to these kinds of issues, and recently I caught up with one of them for a special extended conversation on the topic. The head of online expression policy at the UNC Chapel Hill Center on Technology Policy, Dr. Scott Brennan. Welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
First off, tell us about the Center on Technology Policy at UNC Chapel Hill. I would wager there's an awful lot of people, maybe even at UNC Chapel Hill, who don't know about it, about your work and sort of what it's up to.
Yeah, so we're a relatively new center. We officially launched, I want to say it was March or April 2022. I guess it's been a few years now. We're a, I'd say, a sort of non-traditional academic center where we do some academic work, but mostly we're focused on offering concrete, you know, workable policy recommendations and tech policy, mostly oriented towards practitioners. That's policymakers on the government side or policy professionals at platforms. So we write briefs and white papers, we do research, we hold events, we have convenings, all sort of geared towards coming up with real kind of practical recommendations. And we work across four areas: online expression, which is technically what I lead, child online safety, US-China relations, and then antitrust. Although now we've also been doing a lot of work in AI policies. You might imagine that sort of bisects everything that we do. And then also we, for the past, for a while now, have been doing a lot of work in state policy. So much of the policy conversation in tech is focused on what's happening at the federal level, but we have realized, and we make the argument that we can't really understand what's happening in this country in terms of tech policy without looking at the states, which have just been so incredibly active over the past few years.
Obviously, when we talk about artificial intelligence or generative artificial intelligence, there's a lot of promise, but also a lot of potential pitfalls that comes anytime you got new technology. Can you set the stage for our listeners a little bit about how to separate the good and the worrisome when it comes to generative AI?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, well, that's a big question. I think we're in this really interesting moment where, you know, the technology is advancing so quickly. It seems like every week there's a new model with new capabilities. We're really trying to figure out not only what it can do, but what are the risks that we should be most concerned about. So our work has mostly focused on generative AI in political ads, which is, of course, you know, a one tiny sort of sliver of the conversation about AI risks and AI policy more generally. But for us, we kind of started working on this, well, for two reasons. One, I've been doing work on political ads for a long time, and the center has been doing work on political ads. But also, really, since last spring, there's been a huge amount of discussion and concern about this content, generative AI content in political ads. You know, what sort of effect it might have and how we should deal with that. So that's sort of what we've been most kind of focused on.
There are four, I think, right categories of concern maybe you've highlighted thus far. There's scale, which is generative AI-based tools will make it easier and cheaper for advertisers to create false content. There's authenticity, personalization, bias. These are the categories y'all have identified. Talk to us about some of those concerns. What does that mean? I mean, a lot of us understand that we're going to see ads that may not be genuine, but they may get us to try to do something when it comes to the election. Is that the essence of it? And
just, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, in this piece we put out last November, the goal was to first try to identify what is new here. Like, what should we really be concerned about? Like, what is different, right? Lying in political ads is nothing new. Fake of photo or video content is not new. Those things have been around for as long as there have been photos and video. But there is something notably different here, right? Like, there is something that we should be concerned about. So first we wanted to identify just what are people concerned about? What is really new here? And then to read each of those concerns through the existing academic literature. And so you're right, we synthesize all of the different concerns on this topic into these four categories. Basically just that bad actors can produce more problematic, deceptive content. It might be more convincing as it's more authentic, it seems more real. It might be more personalized. So this is more about targeting, right? So the concern that bad actors can make content that is, you know, geared to persuade small groups and is more capable of doing so. And then finally bias, and that's the concern that generative AI might sort of exacerbate or amplify discrimination in political ads. And to sort of skip to the end here, as far as the conclusions, basically what we argue is that some of the concerns around generative AI and political ads have likely been overstated, and some have been understated. And so basically, given what we know about the ability of pieces of misinformation or political ads to persuade people to change who they vote for, which is they don't have much capability. Like, political ads rarely change the candidate who someone supports. So given that, you know, we think that some of these concerns around the strong effects of generative AI and political ads might be slightly overstated. That being said, you know, where we think that there needs to be more attention is really two places. One, on smaller or down ballot races, like Biden v. Trump, right? Like, generative AI content, it's probably not going to make a difference, right? Like, there's so much attention, there's so much money, there's so many ads, people's opinions are already largely made up. But where it may matter is these tiny down ballot races, right? County commissioner, city council, school board. Voters may not even know who the candidates are. They know nothing about the candidates. There's little advertising. There's little oversight, right? There's little local journalism these days. And so a single piece of false content, deceptive content, a single advertising campaign can have a larger effects here. And then the second area is one that we identified, this bias category. And I think what this speaks to is that so much of the attention has been focused on the deceptive use of generative AI and political ads. But the truth is, campaigns, advertisers, they're going to use these tools in all sorts of ways, not only deceptive ways. They're going to be using these tools to just make ads that may be totally fine.
They're visually attractive and that sort of convey their message.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we can't kind of forget that there actually are some really good uses of these tools in political ads, right? Smaller, you know, poor campaigns don't have the same resources can use these tools to make better looking ads. And I think that's actually how most campaigns or most advertisers are going to use these tools. So that may not raise these questions about like deceptive content, but, you know, we do know that many of these models have these built-in biases. And if campaigns are using these models without really, you know, critically assessing them, they may be sort of bringing forth or amplifying those biases into their ads. For example, like one simple example, right? If they're like using these tools to sort of like create like, you know, crowds, right, around them, like create an image of supporters or something, you know, there may be sort of biases about like who is shown and who is not shown. Even these sort of simple cases like might be opportunities to sort of like amplify the biases.
Coming up next, part two of my conversation with Dr. Scott Brennan. Stay with us.
Read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In part one of my recent conversation with the head of online expression policy at the UNC Chapel Hill Center on Technology Policy, Dr. Scott Brennan, we delved into the subject of artificial intelligence, or AI, and some of the good and bad things it can do when it comes to communication. In part two of our chat, we continued this discussion with a special focus on political communication, both with respect to the 2024 election and more generally. And as Brennan told me, while he remains optimistic that phony AI messaging poses only a limited risk to the national election, there are risks and some important steps that elected officials can and should consider taking to help preserve the health of our democracy.
the technology is getting better really fast, as you alluded to. My colleague was pointing out that not that long ago, you could use a program like Midjourney, a very popular program, and it might be kind of easy to figure out what was the fake image, but it's getting quickly better and better. I literally type in a prompt in words and they create an image that looks plausible.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right that these models are getting better it feels like every day, right? It's maybe not quite every day, but it's regularly. You know, there's new models being produced, like new updates. You know, I will say that in the context of political ads, a lot of the biggest models do have prohibitions on using the models for political content. And so, you know, DALL-E, which is the OpenAI model, uh-huh. I think even Midjourney, they say explicitly that they do not allow people to use their tools to create images of politicians or images that could be used for elections.
What about the social media companies? Obviously, Meta and X, formerly Twitter, have a big influence on everything we see. TikTok right now, much in the news. Do they have a responsibility in all of this to regulate it?
I think they certainly think so. I mean, now there's a lot of different platforms and they have a lot of different policies, but the biggest ones that run in the context of political ads that run political ads, I think mm-hmm. all have instituted new requirements. So in digital political advertising, Google and Facebook account for something like 75% of all digital political ads. It's crazy. It's a huge amount. But both of them have now instituted requirements, or will be shortly, requiring that any ad, political ad that contains generative AI content, must have a label or a disclosure. Now, there's a lot of questions about how accurate those labels will be, what effect those labels will have. I think both companies rely on like self-reporting, that like when you upload a political ad, you have to check a box if it has generative AI content. But yeah, I mean, they're certainly imposing these new policies on this content.
But I guess I could see where maybe someone in the KGB or whatever the Russian intelligence agency is these days might not be checking that box when they uploaded something. Just a wild notion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's foreign disinformation campaigns to be worried about. And there's also domestic, right? I mean, sure. We've already seen examples of deceptive political ad content or political communication content coming from inside the country as well.
One of the top priorities, of course, for your center is the idea that we could inform policymakers to structure laws and regulations that would make this kind of technology more beneficial generally to society. I guess only 4 states have actually passed laws that purport to regulate GAI-produced media in political ads: Texas, California, Washington, Minnesota. Is that something you think more states should be doing?
So it's actually 5. Michigan also passed a disclosure requirement. Yeah. And California's bill actually sunset at the beginning of the year, although they're looking at passing it. Anyway, sorry to quibble. But yeah, and a bunch of other states have introduced bills that would require disclosures on some political ads that contain generative AI content. So Michigan, Wisconsin, they only require disclosures when the ad content basically shows someone doing something they didn't do or saying something they didn't say. But I think Florida, there's a bill that passed the House and the Senate, and then a handful of other states have. To back up for a second, there's actually 2 different approaches, right? There's the passing disclaimer requirements, and then there's the outright ban of certain content. So Minnesota and Texas have bans on certain generative AI content and political ads. That's like deceptive content. Again, that content that shows people doing something they didn't do or saying something they didn't say. And that's what the states have been really active in this. The federal government too, there's been some legislation introduced, although not, I don't think anyone really thinks that we're going to see anything pass.
Do things pass Congress these days?
I'm not sure they do, yeah. I mean, that's honestly what's like animated our interest in state policy. When you realize that like no major tech bills have passed Congress, maybe since the CHIPS Act. And while last year is like, I think we counted like 65 bills passed at the state level. So
I can't imagine there aren't First Amendment concerns that some people have raised. You know, there are certainly implications for free speech. Well,
yeah, certainly I think the disclaimer requirements, some people also have First Amendment concerns. But, you know, certainly on the outright ban of generated content, anywhere you look at it, that is a restriction in speech. That's a content regulation on political speech. And so you know, if there is a challenge, which I imagine there probably will be, certainly under like the Minnesota law, the courts will analyze it through strict scrutiny, which is the sort of like highest level of scrutiny. You know, I'm terrible at predicting things, but I would be surprised if that bill is sort of upheld.
So we think Congress unlikely to act, states sort of all over the map. But if you had a list of maybe some top priorities that you would like to see members of Congress pursue, or perhaps the North Carolina General Assembly, what are some recommendations you think that would actually improve this area, would make it better for consumers and citizens, and without harming free speech?
So that's a great question. So yeah, in a report, we offer 10 recommendations. Okay. And they're grouped into two categories. One is policymakers should aim to target electoral harms rather than the technologies themselves. What we mean by this is, you know, as we see it, we don't really care if it's deceptive content is made by DALL-E, you know, an OpenAI, or Photoshop, right? And so regulations, whatever they are, like should be written to focus on the harms, right? Like not on the technologies. But that focus on the harms, I think, is really key. And so, you know, the thing I think that many people agree on as far as the, you know, the type of content that we don't want to see is voter suppression, especially the forms of lies about electoral processes, right? So there's a long history of falsehoods about when you should vote, where you can vote, the ID requirements. And we've seen throughout the years, these campaigns of spreading lies about those things in order to suppress certain parts of the vote. Now, you know, crazily enough, we do not have federal prohibitions on this sort of content. So some states do, in fact, do have these sort of prohibitions, although how they're enforced, it's all sort of kind of up in the air. You know, but this is actually something that Matt Perrault, who's my co-author and he's the director of the center, you know, we've called for a number of times is, you know, passing a federal prohibition on this type of election disinformation. So we're there, right? Like that's the harm that we care about, right? That you know, it's not about, we shouldn't just regulate the technology making this sort of content. We should regulate the harm here. Another kind of recommendation is we picked up on something that Steve Bannon actually said about his approach to disinformation, which was to flood the zone with bad content. And so he said, well, you know, if we're so concerned, you know, given that, you know, we think that we should be concerned about these down ballot smaller races, well, maybe what we need to do is make sure that there's more good content, right? So local election officials, state offices should be just producing more good information so that if there is
voter
this
guides,
yeah, exactly, like, you know, we need to support local journalists, right, to like, so that there could be more coverage of local elections, so that, you know, if and when there are these deceptive campaigns at the local level, that they'll be diluted. The second big bucket is that regulation should promote learning about generative AI. The kind of key thing that we came coming back to in reviewing the literature here is that there's so much we don't know. For example, I'm very sympathetic to these sort of regulations around labeling, about disclosures, but we have no idea if they work. We don't know how voters respond to labels. We don't know what type of labels work best. This is actually, I'm actually in the middle of running an experiment right now to test this out. But this is the sort of thing that, like, if we're going to pass regulations on, it seems important that we just know a little bit more. I'm not saying, right, that like we shouldn't act until we have perfect information, but rather it's like it's important that we continue to gather information to try to make the best regulation that we can. But it's also important that we think that regulations themselves can be tools for learning more. And so any rules that we put in place, they should have sort of built-in mechanisms to test out their effectiveness, right? So there should be monitoring and evaluation of the regulations that get put in place. Another thing that we call for, and we've done this, and we have a piece that just came out of Brookings Institute, is we call for more kind of experimental kind of approaches to policy, where doing things like running policy experiments, right? Short tests of new types of policy can be a really good way to just sort of see what works the best to get the sort of best ideas here. So these are the sort of things that we recommend as far as what policymakers should do to move forward on this issue.
We're coming to the end of our time with Dr. Scott Brennan. He's the head of the Online Expression Policy at UNC Chapel Hill Center on Technology Policy. I won't ask you to give us advice on how to cope with this new world in the coming months, but are you optimistic? Do you have any thoughts for yourself and your family as to how you'll be approaching the election? And or it will just be a very interested observer, perhaps.
Yeah, a little of both. Definitely interested to see how it evolves. You know, last year we already saw some interesting examples of this content kind of popping up in campaign advertisements. You know, so I think the most famous example is the DeSantis campaign created this ad that showed Trump and Anthony Fauci hugging.
Right.
So we've already seen some examples, of course, the Biden robocall, the fake Biden robocall in the New Hampshire primary. So I think we're going to continue to see examples of this. You know, optimism. Yeah. I mean, no, I'm not optimistic, but, you know, I do think this is definitely something like I'll probably regret saying, but like, I do think that like maybe there's been a little more kind of concern on this topic than maybe is warranted. We are going to see a lot of this content. Some of it will be deceptive and some of it may have kind of significant impacts on different elections. But I don't think we're going to see this sort of like huge sort of deluge of really impactful content, but we'll see.
Any place that you'd recommend people to check out if they wanted to learn more about this subject for the layperson? Any good places to go, or maybe just go to your center?
Sure. Yeah. So you can visit our website, which is techpolicy.unc.edu. We've been writing on this for a while. And as I said, we'll have some pieces coming out soon on this topic. It's nice to see like such a robust sort of discussion happening about generative AI right now.
Well, we're glad you're at one of our public institutions playing an important role in that. We thank you so much for your time. Dr. Scott Brennan is the head of Online Expression Policy at UNC Chapel Hill Center on Technology Policy. I assume this is a topic that's not going to go away, so we'll probably have another conversation in the future, I hope.
Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, thank you so much, Rob.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncnewsline.com. You can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries wherever you get your podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views, a weekly look at state news, events, and public policy debates produced by North Carolina Newsline. Visit them online at ncnewsline.com.